This talk was given by Danica Shoan Ankeley at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Some lines that I've been carrying with me for years. And I guess they come with such a lot of heart that it's coming up right now. And I've been sinking into them, but I haven't said them aloud in a room. They will be very familiar to some of you. Ready? I don't want my voice to be all shaky when I finally read them, so I'm just taking a minute. These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. These mountains and rivers of the present These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. This was not anticipated. I'll tell you though, I should have anticipated it because these are the opening lines to the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, which is a core part of this monastery. And I'll say more about that. For those of you who aren't familiar with that. And they are a link between me and Daido Roshi, I'm realizing. And his teachers before him. So the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, also translated as the Mountains and Waters Sutra. And perhaps I'll just give it one more try. These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. Each abiding in its own Dharma state completely fulfills its virtues. Because they are the state prior to the kalpa of emptiness, they are living in the present. Because they are the self before the germination of any subtle sign, they are liberated in their actualization. We say, a lot of Zen teachings are dark to the mind, but radiant to the heart. And that particular instruction is offered for folks who are listening to their first talk, like on a Sunday here at the monastery, particularly if it's one of the teachers giving a talk and they, choose a koan. I remember sitting in the Zendo for years really feeling like I didn't like the teachers were speaking another language. And so it was, and to a great degree still is, for me with this incredible teaching. So this is a teaching by Master Dogen, who's one of the founders of the Zen school. or the Soto School, I should say. And it's part of a body of fascicles, we call them, short kind of chapters in his masterwork, Shobogenzo. And, you know, reading Dogen, taking in Dogen, I remember Miyotai Sensei saying it's like encountering Dogen is like lifting the needle off the record, that it stops you, and that our ordinary way of, you know, understanding a thing isn't going to work. And that to really appreciate Dogen is to, you know, take the needle off the record, let go of our kind of attaining, grasping, gaining mind that wants to understand, and to have to learn to be in the presence of the mystery and to tolerate that kind of not knowing, which is really excellent for our Zen practice. And so when I first heard the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, and I can't remember the first time I heard it, I feel like it used to be something that Daido Roshi would, you know, kind of return to again and again, and kind of pepper quotations throughout his teishos, and kind of imbued a lot of his teaching. But those lines, and maybe it's because they're in the beginning and so they're the ones that I heard the most, those lines really like stayed with me. And I'm a lover of the mountains. I love to be out in them. And so immediately, although I could appreciate that, you know, this wasn't like an ordinary teaching about like mountains, immediately I felt an affinity for it. And there was something about, you know, that exquisite poetry and the mystery of it that seemed really true to me. It felt radiant to my heart. I felt I recognize this as true, but I don't know what it means. And something about it, I just carried it with me. And having gone on, you know, many trips into the mountains, I would often at the summit of a, you know, beautiful vista, kind of looking out, feeling stopped by the beauty of the experience, I would say these lines to myself and kind of wonder, you know, about what does that mean? And they recently came back to me because Gokhan has a new translation of the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, translated, I believe, more correctly as Mountains and Waters Sutra. And so he had it on our most recent trip. We spent a couple of days in New Hampshire in the mountains, and we got up to this incredible lookout, you know, like up high, as high as you can get on the East Coast, which granted is more humble than other places in the world. But like looking out, I was like, do you have the book? Let's read the Mountains and Rivers Sutra. And he's like, no, I didn't like bring it up here. And I'm like, wait, how does it go? And so I was just saying it. All I could really remember were those opening lines. These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. And I kept kind of saying it as we looked out over and, you know, sinking in again into what's the teaching there? So, so, what's the teaching there? Well, I will just share a little bit of my encounter. And I was reading a little bit of that newer translation or commentary. I guess it's not a new translation so much as it is a new commentary by Shihaku Okamura Roshi. He says in his introduction or in the early chapters that, the mountains and rivers, the mountains and waters, I'll probably go back and forth and use both. Sutra is not a sutra about mountains and rivers, but the mountains and rivers themselves are the sutra. The mountains and rivers themselves are the word of the ancient Buddhas. And he talks about how that word sutra in Sanskrit and same ways with its Chinese and Japanese translation means a string, like the kind of string that you would string a garland of flowers on, he says. And he says, a sutra is intended to be the actual or sort of the purported actual live words and teachings of the Buddha, that the Buddha himself spoke of. And in the Theravadan tradition, the Sanskrit and Pali teachings of the Buddha that have been handed down are understood to be his actual teachings, like, thus have I heard, and then, like, this is what the Buddha said, and da-da-da-da-da. And then there's all of this literature within Mahayana Buddhism that was created after the Buddha's death. And we still speak of those things from within, at least the Mahayana tradition, as sutras, like the Lotus Sutra, for example. Okamura Roshi says, in our common way of thinking, their belief is that these teachings were spoken by Shakyamuni their belief that these teachings were spoken by Shakyamuni Buddha himself is not true. So Mahayana Buddhism is based on a collection of fake sutras. However, and this is a very important point of Mahayana Buddhism, how can we see the Buddha's body? How can we hear the Buddha's voice? Is it possible or not? Mahayana Buddhism, including Dogen, thought that it is. It is possible, at least in Dogen's tradition, to hear the Buddha's voice. The Buddha's voice. At least in Dogen's tradition, the sounds of valley streams, the sounds of everything in nature, like the wind, birdsong, temple bells, expound what the Buddha taught. They expound the reality that the Buddha awakened to. If our eyes are open to see, whatever we see is the Buddha's body. If our eyes are open to see, whatever we see is the Buddha's body. And I humbly take issue with the sounds of everything in nature being a limiting factor, the car alarms, the barking dogs, when we really hear them, are the Buddha's body. So with our awakened eye, we encounter the sutras. With our awakened ear, we encounter the Buddha's teaching, fresh, live, undiluted, uncorrupted, complete. And Okamura Roshi goes on to say, mountains and rivers are not objects to study, but we are part of mountains
and rivers. I was looking back at one of Daido's talks on the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, and he talks about, you know, what are the mountains and rivers? If we're not just talking about mountains and rivers, like, what are we talking about? And I started going in there a little bit, and then I saw some other commentaries, and I was just like, ah! And I thought, you know what? I'm going to stick with, like, mountains and rivers. Mountains as mountains, and rivers as rivers. And of course, mountains as Buddha mind, and you as mountains and rivers and waters as Buddha and you. So the story goes, as I have heard it, that Daido Roshi was at ZCLA, and he had he was working with his teacher, Maizumi Roshi, on Genjo Koan, another one of the fascicles of Dogen. And they were working together in face-to-face teaching on this. And as part of his work and presentation and demonstration of his understanding, Daido Shi was taking photographs to go along with the different sections of Genjo Koan, and these got collected along with Maizumi Roshi's commentary into a book called The Way of Everyday Life. And shortly after completing that, Daido was introduced to the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, apparently at the time a rather new translation of it by Carl Bielefeld. And he read it and was immediately taken with it and thought, oh, this would be a great next thing to work on with Maizumi Roshi. Like, this is what I would like to do. And kind of was thinking along those lines and maybe taking some photographs and da-da-da. And plans changed, as they are wont to do. And he was asked, instead of continuing his studies there, to accompany his elder Dharma brother, Tetsugen, Bernie Glassman, back east to help him get his center started. And so Daido Shi, you know, was like, okay, I guess this comes later. And in his journal, he scrawled out the beginning of the Mountains and Rivers Sutra. These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. Stuck his journal in his bag, and off they went. And one thing led to another, and somehow back east, Daido found himself right outside here on this mountain, looking at this incredible building, which had been empty and deserted. And in a fortuitous, kind of incredible leap of faith and what must have been a profound intuition, decided that he was going to buy this building and start, at that time, a Zen art center. And so, he has no money, miracles happen, et cetera, et cetera. And like, he's got the building, and he's like, now he's like, gotta like make this thing happen. And like, I don't know, I can only imagine. And so he, one morning, he heads into Woodstock, or Phoenicia, let's say it's Brio's, just for old time's sake, and gets a cup of coffee and the paper, the Woodstock Times, and he's, you know, reading the paper, and he opens up to the first spread, and he sees in bold across the top, these mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. And he's like, whoa. There it is, the exact, words he had written down in his journal. And it's not clear to me from different versions of the story whether the rest of the article was on Dogen or the rest of the article was a reprint of the sutra, but he took it as I would also, as a very serendipitous sign that indeed this was a good thing. And so from there, once, it was time to name this as an order, in his mind anyway, time to do it, he chose the mountains and rivers order. And it makes so much sense to me that he really loved that this teaching of Dogen's, because he was such a, he had such an affinity, for the outdoors. And I was remembering as I've been, kind of reflecting on all of this and hearing in my interior, Roshi's voice, like reading the Mountains and Rivers Sutra and so on and so forth. I was thinking about the first time that I felt like I actually connected with Daido was I was doing a year of residency, and I was in my early 20s. I knew nothing about Zen, and I made myself go to Doksan. I made myself go to Doksan every time. I had a commitment to myself, like, you will go every time, because I knew otherwise I would totally try and weasel out of it. And every time I went in there, I felt like stupid and awkward, and I didn't know what to say, and I felt like he was so bored with me, and I felt lame. And I felt like, I don't even know if he really knows who I am. And then I had this opportunity, I think maybe somebody canceled or something, I had this opportunity to go on the wilderness trip. And for many years, Daidashi would go with some of the senior monastics and lead a canoe trip in the Adirondacks, a tradition that is in some ways alive and well with our Circles on the Water trip. So I got to go on this trip, and it was incredible. It was so cool, first of all, because I was with Daido and with Shugen outside of the monastery, which was unreal. I was oh my God, what's it gonna be like? What's it gonna be like to be with enlightened beings, driving down the highway? And the thing that I remember is we stopped, as was tradition, in a little diner and in Long Lake, on the way, up in, once you're in the Adirondacks. We left so early in the morning. That was super fun. And we were caravanning in cars. And I just remember I think it was before cell phones. So if somebody needed to pee or something, you had to flash the blinkers, and everyone pulled over and rolled down the windows and was what's going on? And so there was some of that happening in the dark of the early morning. And then we got to this diner, and what I remember is this was going to be my first casual experience with Roshi and so forth, in a diner situation. And I was oh my God, he was not that nice to the waitress. And I was I can't believe, I totally thought an enlightened person would be really nice to the wait staff. And it wasn't that he was a jerk, but he just it did not fulfill my fantasy. So it's okay. So then we're in at Raquette Lake, we're in Moose Bay, and the other thing that I remember, it was so Daido was just so relaxed, because he wasn't in abbot mode in the same way. And he was wearing his comfy camos, and he had his knife on his belt and his tin coffee cup, and he got the best spot, of course, and he had his whole area set up. And We'd all, like, you know, took our little spots in the woods and would either paddle over or, depending on where we were, walk over to, like, the central fire ring. And part of the trip was that you were going to prepare for a overnight solo. So we were, like, together for a few days, and then each person was going to go find a spot to be in and have an overnight by themselves. And I remember him saying, you know, so everyone needs to bring back a story. He was, like, such a good storyteller, and so he may have even, like, sat us down and, like, I'm sure he did, like, spun his own excellent tale for the occasion and then sent us off. And the homework was, like, okay, go, like, have your experience of the teachings of the insentient and, like, bring back a story. And I just remember, first of all, there were a few things. It was like he taught us to, when you entered your campsite, to ask permission of the muse that was in that spot before you made your camp there. And that was like a mind blower to me because I knew that is so correct. Like, that is what should be done. But I had never, no one had taught me that. I'd been camping a lot. I had never asked permission of the muse. So I was so grateful. And, you know, at the end, he made a point of, like, you know, you have to, like, give thanks and, like, thank the muse when you leave. Anyway, I had my solo, which was really good. And we came back and we were all sharing our stories. And I just loved also just, like, hearing everybody's stories. It's sort of like if you're a resident, the first time you have the art practice presentations and you get to see all these people that you've been living with and practicing with in a particular way, like, bust out their, like, guitars and, like, do their, like, weird movement and, like, have, like, their performative moment or, like, put their art out there. And see this person in a whole other way. And so that's how it felt to me. I was, like, taking in all of these people. And Daidashi turned to me and he said, Danica. And I felt like I did not even know he knew my name. But by then, I guess I felt like he did because we'd been out on the water. He was like, you are really getting a kick out of this, aren't you? And he laughed. And I felt so seen. And I laughed too. And I just remember feeling, like, very together in it out there. So the mountains and rivers, the mountains and waters sutra, what can, how do we begin? How do we even begin to like sink in or make use of the teachings there. To be in the presence. To be in the presence. And here we are on this incredible mountain with her incredible waters. To really be completely in her presence. And we can't help it, but we may not have our eye really open. Do you know that all of the water comes to us from a mountain spring? Everything, when you're washing your dishes or brewing the coffee or showering, let alone drinking, it's such delicious water, it comes right from the mountain. So with that in mind, we could ask ourselves, where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line between me and the mountain? So many teachings we can glean just from how the mountain like, just lets things happen in their own time. She's not like impatient for fall to get here so she can deck herself out in all those incredible colors. It's like, in its time, all the rain we've been having, so much rain, all the waters, the rivers, the ponds, fuller and fuller and fuller, and it's okay. From that dry trickle to, like, I heard there were actually waves the other day in the stream that goes by the Sangha house. Alice Walker has a poem, When You See Water. When you see water in a stream, you say, oh, this is stream water. When you see water in the river, you say, oh, this is water of the river. When you see ocean water, you say, this is the ocean's water. But actually, water is always only itself and does not belong to any of these containers, though it creates them. And so it is with you. Water is always only itself and does not belong to any of these containers, though it creates them. And so it is with you. The teachings of the mountains and the waters, to me, right now, feel like a teaching on being inside your experience, to be completely present in your real life. These mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of the ancient Buddhas. To be inside our experience. And so in Sishin, we let go of everything that might take us out so that we can be completely inside. And you can start to feel it. It's so nice, the Sishin, where everyone's here for the full week, because it feels like together we're getting deeper inside. You can feel it in the liturgy. People are finding their way into their service positions. You can feel it in Orioki. The servers are in. They're in it now. And so to be inside the forms of the liturgy, to be inside our life means, what's holding us out? I mean, we're always inside our life. So where's the boundary? Where's the barrier? When we're inside our body versus when we're sitting, I mean, you know, clearly like we're inside our body, but we are gone. We're somewhere else. So the mountains and the waters are offering this very direct teaching on how to do Zazen. How to find ourselves inside our life. We are always only ourself, of course, but we do create so many containers. We create so many containers, and all of them are containers we create with our mind, with our ideas. And we don't just do it for ourselves, we do that for everybody else too. So, you know, she's so uptight, he's lazy. She's really calm under pressure. He's totally withdrawn. I've really got this down. I'm excellent. Ugh, what an idiot. I'm such a constant screw up. To see the arising of the container and to not be fooled. What's the water? What's the water? What's that unbounded, ancient Buddha? When Gina Sharp was here, she said, love is the willingness to receive whatever there is with kindness and patience. Love is the willingness to receive whatever there is with kindness and patience. And so although we might say it's anthropomorphic to speak of mountains or waters loving, somehow looked at from another view, it seems like, wow, I could learn from that. They say that the mountains belong to the country, but actually they belong to those who love them. That's Dogen. So bringing that love, that patience and kindness into our zazen, when the containers are created, to bring that love to them. And one thing that I've been noticing myself is with my really repetitive ingrained habits or thoughts, it really helps. It helps me to acknowledge them in a little internal dialogue, like not to get carried away, but like I'll notice I'll have a lot of thoughts about, being busy or something. And then I'll say to myself, I'll notice like, okay, you're looping. And I'll say to myself something like, Sho, I hear you. It is true, you have a lot on your plate. It's cool. I hear you. It makes it easier to drop it. I want to end with another of my favorite Dharma words. Oh no, I'm worried I'm going to start crying again. It's so relevant. I think I'm all right. It's under me enough. So this is the poem that Shugen Roshi wrote for Daidoshi a couple days after he died. October 11th, Daidoshi died on the 9th. "78 years, and now your eyes are closed, arising and passing long since seen through. The eyes are not closed. Today, heavenly light fills the valley, revealing all that was hidden to hush the baby's cry. Still, there's this great heaviness in my heart. Oh, teacher, when will I meet you again? Seeing with the ear, Tremper Mountain is your true body. Hearing with the eye, the Esopus is your broad tongue. Old teacher, you have not left, though when I call, you will not answer. Robe wet with tears, every subtle gesture, 9 bows to an empty seat."
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.